The 2017 AFL season is proudly brought to you by Toyota. Toyota footy. Oh, what a feeling.
Triple M footy is the number one football call on radio. And your front row.
For the Fiat Doblo, one small step for van, one giant leap for vankind. With versatility and a 660-kilo payload, Fiat Doblo is your right-hand van.
Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Rub
for McDonald's.
Triple M rocks footy.
Oh, Richard Marsland Studios, the venue for a couple of hours of the best football, analysis, but I'm not sure that's what you'll get out of this crew. I'm just looking to my left. I can see Big BT. After tearing the Witten game to shreds last night, the big man's back. And looking forward to hearing from him. We've got Nath Brown has wandered in. Hello, Nath.
Hey, Jim.
It'd be great to see you. I didn't know you were part of today. That's nice, a perfect result.
Nice cream knitted jumper.
Yes, he's looking very crisp always.
I've been shopping, Brian.
A big week for you, Damo. Lots of news kicking around. Nice to see you.
Hello, Jim. And yeah, we've got a bit of an update or a significant update on the Nathan Buckley-Chris Mayne matter to come over the course of the next half an hour or so.
And the coach of the Allies last night, Duck, had just got nutted. Well, I'd say in the last seconds, but the game had actually finished for 4.5 minutes before Brownie took the mark.
Yeah, absolutely robbed. I've gone over the tape a couple of times last night. I got home, watched it over again, BT, and just looking at a couple of things we did right and wrong and some of the positional moves I could have maybe made a little earlier, like you said, BT. Probably shouldn't have started your man
pocket.
In the back pocket, but he was sharp, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Looked fit.
He was
sharp. But I said last night on the front bar that I was prepared to cop a fine. The umpires were terrible in the last in the last 5 minutes. And then to be, you know, to lose a game after the siren, I'm just shattered.
Well, as we said in the call, Nath, it's rare that you see a goal kicked after the siren. It's even rarer that you see a mark and goal after the siren.
Or a kick and mark. Yeah, it was Kerry Goodstole, wasn't it?
It was. But John O'Brown, all the piss taking aside, has gone back and slotted it from the fence with a drop punt.
Well, BT, and look, as we know, but last night, I don't know, 24 goals, one team kicked, and the barrels Jimmy Bartel kicked.
Yeah,
surprise me. You look at the kicking skills. I know he's just recently out of the game, but you look at John O'Brown and a few of the others. They kick the ball better still now than any AFL player.
John O'Brown looked skinnier and slighter and moved better than what he did when he played his last couple of seasons. The same can't be said for Paul Hazelby, unfortunately.
Brad or Paul?
Brad Hazelby.
Who I've called Brad a couple of times. And he came up to me last night and said, oh, Brad, is it? So I felt a bit uncomfortable. But one thing it showed me last night was that if you unleash the torp, the barrel, then these guys can actually kick it. Now, what it shows you is someone like Bartel, who nailed about 4 out of 5 or 4 out of 6 or something, that if their coaches would allow them to do it, they are capable of doing it. But just the tight constraints of, you know, the team game at the serious level, they just don't allow you to do it. I think it's disappointing.
It should be something they practice, particularly the guys that kick out from fullback. I don't think any forward wants a barrel going inside 50, but definitely from fullback, guys like Lyndon Dunn, but the clubs have got to allow them to practice to do it.
Actually, Brownie, I disagree a little bit. The barrels that, when someone did kick a barrel, and every now and then Corey or one would unleash it, even a mongrel punt sometimes, as you know, if you read the ball really well, read the flight of the ball earlier than your opponent, can often get, you know, an easy mark.
Well, the Chrissy Johnson's was my favourite because that's on the run.
On the run.
And just flushed. Yeah. Like, that's gone 70 metres and just spun. But I remember, Purple, and you would too. We're going to have a listen to John O'Brown in just a sec, that goal after the siren. But I remember, and you would too, Bristles, your era, the great Jimmy Cracker. Yep. Because he didn't have great depth with his kick, if he was trying on a wet night to get the ball over the back, he would do a one-step barrel that would go only 50 metres, but he got him spinning every single time. There are just blokes that can.
And that's what happened last night. They got him over the back, and all of a sudden they misjudged it, and they were 5 metres, you know, too close to the footy, and it got him out. It was great to see. It's a pity we can't make it happen in our game. Dustin Fletcher did a couple from fullback. He is just awesome. I went into that game thinking, and you know, I come and spoke to the teams before the game. I went into that game thinking, oh, there's maybe one or two guys on each side that would be capable of the barrel. I was surprised that there were more. Many.
We no longer do the worst on ground on Triple M, but
because of Duck.
A couple of candidates from last night, Brian, who do you think just didn't get the job done?
Oh, look, there was one guy, he probably sits in the chair that I'm sitting in now on Triple M Breakfast.
What happened there?
Luke Darcy was, How bad was it?
Well, and Bristol.
Scared.
Horrific.
Someone else say it.
Not
scared.
Only,
scared.
Not only that, but he had sat in this office, in this great hot breakfast studio, and said what he wasn't going to do with Monk off the first bounce was nobody's business. He was going to split him in two. He was going to dive his knee into his chest. All this sort of thing. So we had this big build-up. You know, it was almost like Crackers Keenan and, you know, pouring the ground at the end.
Don Scott.
Don Scott. That was what we thought was going to happen. And then the first bounce happened, Brownie. And Monk pushed him out to the wing.
And we also
ejected him out of the square.
We also learnt that before the game, you know, he'd been talking about his hamstring and Woody Ord and not make. That was all about generating me. But we learnt through some sources.
Doc Rowan White?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
That he actually didn't have a hamstring at all. There was no hamstring.
Hey, we've all played with guys that when it gets a little bit tough, even at training, even pre-season, they're the ones that, okay, my back's tightened up a bit, or not having a good day, we're 10 goals down at the MCG, I'm just a bit tight, not my fault. And it's clear to see why back in 97, 98, when we had a chance to win the flag, we had guys like Darcy in our side and we were never going
to
win it.
I did say to him before the game, I might have deflated him just a little bit because I sort of said that I didn't want him to skip up. But, but let's be honest, with an effort like that, he's not skipping material. That was the first mistake.
So take us into the rooms before the game. What was it like? These guys getting together, some of them for the first time in a long time. You've got 20 or 30 guys sitting there. What was the chitter-chatter? How was the reaction to each other? And how did it all blend in behind the scenes?
You know what it is? It is good fun, BT, as you know. You go down in the rooms and all the players, as you said, you know, the respect that the players have for players that they've played against and some played with, it's just really good fun. And the feeling is just like you're going to have a really good night, enjoy their company, and then afterwards all get together and, you know, swap a few stories as you normally do.
Now, what are we hearing?
Well,
refusing Purple
to pick up the phone. This is Luke Darcy.
This is a man contracted arranged, to our station.
Arranged to speak to us at 12:06, and Luke Tunnicliffe is now informing us, just not even answering.
This is akin to Sir Alex Ferguson when he was the manager of Man United refusing an interview with his own website.
Well, Ed texted me while we were on air last night saying, could you please replay the vision of him doing his hamstring? I had to tell Ed that there was no vision. Because he hadn't done his hamstring.
He walked on and
he was
on.
Just terrible.
Apparently he said he tweaked his calf.
Oh, his calf now.
No, the guy's turning into Spud. He's got that many stories. So he doesn't know what he
tells one story to one person, another to another. Hey,
he
Doug,
he had trainers at half time putting a wedge in his boot. All sorts of
orthotics. Doug, you wouldn't have heard the commentary. Obviously, you're involved in the game. Did you hear it, Brownie?
Yes.
Yeah. How's the chemistry between our two?
It was good, wasn't it? Corner? It was good to hear Jim.
It was good to have them back together on TV in a way that clearly something's working, being worked upon for the future.
Listen to these halfwits.
How was the box anyway?
It was just beautiful. Just the two voices, no special comms even, just Brayshaw and Taylor.
Rip it into
something. Why didn't you have any special comments, people?
You know what's another? It's Brownie. Yeah. Jay Brayshaw wearing a Channel 7 on his lapel.
Oh, was he?
Oh, Jose Mary just getting involved in the discussion.
So, how was it, BT, to have him back calling TV football and the first of many games for seven to come?
Look, it was fantastic. I mean, I call with JB every weekend and have for 15 years, so it just sort of happened. We were brilliant together.
there was a real TV chemistry,
that,
though.
What can I say? Nah, it was good fun and it's just a one-off for JB.
That's it, and a nice one too.
Yeah.
Now we do need to have a listen.
Move on.
We do need to have a listen to John O'Brown. It was extraordinary with all of the fun that we have in this game. This after the siren, unable to go off the line, obviously, or that was the end of the game. So he had to stay on the line, kick a drop punt from outside the ground. Have a listen.
Richard Short, 5-point ball game. Johnson, Uze, siren's gone. All stars at one. Jonathan Brown has paid the mark. He can't play on. He has to kick it from the angle.
Oh, no.
A kick after the siren to win the game.
He's got five.
Jonathan Brown has got to kick the goal from the boundary to win it for the Vics. What can he do? We're right behind it.
What?
I think he's got it.
No way.
Oh, he's got it. Brown's killed
it. That is unbelievable. Never looked like missing. Never looked like missing. It went straight through the middle, didn't it?
Yeah, it did sound like there were 100,000 people there. Yeah,
that's the sort of electricity that you can generate if you know what you're doing. No, it was a great night. There were some other worst on ground candidates. Yeah. And some of our great friends, Purple, like Sam Fisher, nowhere near enough
actually,
for me.
Actually, what was he
A man who's
doing?
Just played the game at an incredibly high level. Yeah. Almost didn't
look good, though, as always.
Looked good. I think he might have had his mind elsewhere.
Right. Who did you feel was just a bit too serious? The Richie Vandenberg style.
Phil Matera.
Yeah, Phil Matera. He kicked at seven and not giving him off, and everyone's giving him man balls and he doesn't reciprocate. I mean, what is going on there?
He reached the red zone, didn't he? Yeah, and they take himself too seriously.
At the end of the game, both JB and I thought, I wonder whether we should have had that. Because, you know, the serious meter.
I liked it as a viewer.
I know the player. Well, the players didn't know that you had that.
And that's a good thing.
And it's funny. Actually, you talk about what the banter was. A lot of the banter at halftime, because you've obviously played a half, the players are talking about, he's taking it pretty serious, isn't he? And, it's funny because John O'Brien last night was saying how serious Danny Southern was taking it. Danny Southern was saying how serious John O'Brien was taking it. So they were playing on one another and talking about how serious.
Brownie does take it seriously. I know you didn't want to go down in him, BT. No.
He was nominated early. Yeah,
was he?
Just as someone to watch.
Captain.
But I reckon the other thing, Boomer Harvey is a great example of this. I reckon that a couple of the players heard that they'd been targeted as potentials for taking it too seriously. Yeah. So then they overcorrected and got nowhere near the ball. I reckon a little Boom Boom got told at halftime, mate, you actually got to get involved, and then for 10 minutes just tore it to shreds.
I bounce run at one stage.
Yeah. He's playing today in a final, Boomer.
Yeah, he is. A great result for the EJ Witten Foundation. I think over 500,000
kick
as a result of last night. Perhaps a few little extra trimmings as well. So to all those players that took part, and a lot of them come from in-state, don't they? Give up their time. And I know it's great fun to get back together, but it is a bit of a commitment for them to play, and it's great to have. Because that was the best quality fields we've had last night.
Yeah, the standard
was skilled. It was great.
Yeah, the kicking of the ball, as you already said.
Mm-hmm. Wisby Watson, coaching staff abandoned him.
Yes.
He came into the game alone. He had to pull a player out of the team, a Big Shorts Harford, just so he had someone to coach with.
Well, Danny Frawley pulled out. He was on the press release when it was first announced who was coaching Duck, and then the next press release, it didn't have his name on it.
Well, where did he go?
Well, depends who you speak to, because I've had four different versions of why he pulled out.
They're all from Spud?
Yeah.
Three of them from Spud and four from other people. But he tells one thing to one person and forgets that that person may speak to another person who's heard a different story. So what was it, BT?
Well,
you know him.
In the end, I don't know, but I think he was a little fearful of what he might have caught from JB, perhaps, as a result.
That was one of the four I've heard.
Anyway, he pulled out late, Spud, for no particular reason.
And then I understand that
we had another guy pull out as well.
Whispers Watson went to G Lion late and pleaded with him to be his assistant and was resoundingly told to bugger off.
Why didn't you have a special comms, BT? Was it just because you wanted JB to be showcased in the Channel 7 attire?
And that was exactly the reason. Right. JB felt that he didn't.
He sought that? Yeah.
He felt when he met
Lewis Martin two Mondays ago, did he say, we don't need other voices?
I was asked to leave the room at the time, but I did stay with ear glued to the door.
And
I heard him say, we don't need a special comms person. I can do that as well.
Listen to this.
I ran into Feb a couple of weeks ago, and he said he might have been doing it.
No, I don't think he got asked. I'm not sure.
Well, you run the joint, Bristol. I just turn up and do as I'm told. But anyway, what I find astounding with all of this, Duck, is that the Duke seriously had committed to speaking to us today about the game last night.
Yeah.
Now is refusing to answer the phone.
Well, you can be poor once, but you can't be poor twice in a row. You don't make two mistakes. One mistake's okay, Brownie. You don't make two.
He thinks he's just by delaying and bypassing today that he's going to escape. Malloy's after him as well, and so is Ed. So they'll fix him up on the breakfast.
And Duck didn't miss him last night either. Have a listen.
Listen. Really poor in the second part of that quarter. I'm not sure what happened. Das. I didn't want you as skipper. You all knew that. I said that before the game. You said you had something in you. You played like... You've been terrible.
I was off the ground, mate.
You've been terrible. Your centre bounce work, Bungie. We've got a two-time Norm Smith medalist in there. And you can't get the ball anywhere near him. At least put it within a 5-metre radius of him. Get your hands to it. Get up. Get your knee into it. Right. bit of aggression.
It's a fair striping.
Yeah, that's it. Actually, when you listen to that and you listen to the last 14 minutes, it's not surprising he's not answering the phone. We need to get to a
real,
break.
It was real ships in the night stuff, Gus.
That first bounce.
Yeah, soft underbelly.
That reminds us, is it true that you're going to come up with your top 10 paganisms a little bit later on?
I've got some pago stories.
Oh, looking forward to that.
From Melbourne's mean streets.
You could say this was the murder we missed.
A story you'll have to hear to believe.
He said he was a 200-year-old vampire.
Why was Shane Chantra's abbot gunned down before giving evidence?
Two men shot him down. It's a mystery within a mystery within a mystery.
Listen now to this untold true crime story from Adam Shand. The Trials of the Vampire at podcast1.com.au or download the app.
We've got some big news. This has been a big news week, actually, Damo, with, of course, Dusty Martin choosing to re-sign with Richmond after a whole season's worth of speculation. We're going to get to another big player at a club who signed with them last year and his manager isn't happy. But why don't we start with Dusty? How did you see all that rolling out?
Yeah, Jim, look, I think people at Richmond, while they got nervous and apprehensive as it unfolded, they still had a strong confidence throughout. And that played out. Interestingly enough, though, the North offer became very big in the end, BT, as we know. It had been there all the time. When they got wind, North Melbourne, that Josh Kelly was likely to stay at GWS, still yet to be confirmed, by the way, that they went absolutely all in on Dustin Martin. That's how the offer got up to $10.5 million over the 7 years. And Ralph Carr, interestingly enough, the other night on the Footy Show, did admit that the interest from North was significant enough that only 7 days before it was a genuine line ball situation. And North people, Jim and guys, actually indicated to some people they spoke to in Brisbane during that weekend of the Round 23 game against the Lions that they were very comfortable with where that situation was at. And Ralph Carr did, on the Thursday night Footy Show, give a context to all of that.
How close was he to going to North Melbourne? This time last week he was going.
Well, that was the talk. But, you know, I mean, once we weighed everything up and really talked it through in New Zealand and looked at it correctly and Dustin looked at everything, then, you know, we realised that Richmond was where we wanted to be. Dusty gave up over $2 million a stay, which, yeah, Sam...
$2 million?
Yeah. So, I think we've made the right decision.
And the North approach had come early. It got really pointy-ended late. There were several meetings. We knew of one. It was around the round 17 time. They'd played a game against Port Adelaide Duck at that particular point. And Jack Zeeble, Robbie Tarrant were part of a meeting. We've since learnt that Brad Scott was part of at least one meeting. There were multiple meetings.
I reckon Ralph, and I really like Ralph, and I reckon he's done a great job, but Ralph has to say that they were considering it. Otherwise, it looked like he was really holding out on Richmond. You can't just say, oh, you know, we'll
and yeah. And I think the other thing you're also is bound to say is that, to sell it a little bit, is that he's knocking back a certain amount of money to stay at Richmond, because that helps sell the inflated figure to the Richmond people. Because the next thing, after all this settles a little bit, Damo, I'm just wondering, you know, when players all of a sudden are up for renegotiation at Richmond and perhaps they're going through a period that's not so good for I wonder whether they'll come back to this and say, well, hang on a minute, he's getting double what Trent Cotchin is getting. I just get a feeling that could happen down the track.
Don't be surprised if this was done weeks ago, Richmond and Dustin Martin, and they've waited for this perfect opportunity now. I think the timing is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
With a week off, leading in, everybody around that footy club, all the players now know that Dustin Martin is there. They just build it up for the whole 2 weeks. Don't be surprised if this was done 3 weeks ago and this was timed perfectly for the announcement at the moment.
Given the fact he went to visit his dad, I'm not sure it was. But I am sure that Richmond, and you would know this, Damo, I think, put a lot of pressure on to have this done before next week.
Yeah.
Because they thought and were worried that it was going to destroy, led by Brennan Gale, what they were trying to achieve.
That is true. And they lost control, obviously, of the presentation of the story. It's a significant part of the narrative around any such issue these days, how you actually present it to the public, be it a good story or bad story. They abandoned that on the back of the interest, obviously, from media and obviously the successful...
Backroom Footy Show, you touch on a point there. Can you tell us anything, what happened behind the scenes? There's so much talk about what might have happened to make this deal. BT, what can you tell us?
I don't want to sound like I'm evading the question and avoiding the question. I don't know. I wasn't part of it. Eddie was. Clearly others around Eddie were. I was not part of it. I had an awareness of it, but at a distance. And I'd like to go a little bit deeper if I could, but clearly there's a commercial arrangement around it, I would have thought. I mean, that just isn't the way it
works. What sort of figure would Dusty get?
I honestly don't know, Doug. And I refuse to get involved in any such conversations.
Minimum 50, I would say.
What was the audience for the footy show the other night?
230, 40, I think. So
Not great, but that didn't have a lot of relevance. Because of me, they go and acquire and buy this story, for doesn't which is fine. Everyone does it. However, the moment you promo that, so when you buy something and spend a lot of money, you need to promote it and get people watching. They couldn't promote
do that.
It because the moment you promote it, everyone knows what the decision
exactly
is.
Exactly right. Yeah. Channel 7 and everyone else, prior to the footy show going to air, had already said that he's re-signed. So,
But still, the interview with him, even if he has re-signed, is still a compelling reason.
I totally agree.
I get what you're saying, Bristol, that it does tell people what's happening, but you still want to tune in and hear him speak, especially Dusty, who you never hear speak.
No, and he spoke really well.
Really well.
Yeah, I mean, I've only had very short conversations with him over the last 4 or 5 years. When I say short, 90 seconds short on 2 or 3 occasions. But
could we see it tied in? Could we see Dusty and this deal that he did with Nine tied somewhere into the future
or a regular panelist, maybe, Brian?
Oh, look, possibly again, BT. I haven't got an awareness on it. It would make sense.
I think so. And I think the way he spoke the other night, he would have got the nerves out, and he spoke brilliantly the other night.
Yeah,
I thought he was comfortable, he was relaxed. And I think he'd be perfect for that next year.
And Richmond has been working on the beyond football part of this, and that's been ticked off by the AFL. They wouldn't do it otherwise, but that was how they got some extra money into the equation. And part of it, I now believe, again, post the event, is to try and get him into the eyes of the public in a way that he's not, because their internal profiling and analytics on him is he's off the charts with appeal to the younger demographic.
I'll tell you who also be happy with the way this all shook down, Purple, is Paul Marsh and the AFLPA, because they've been screaming for free agency for years for this exact reason, so that when a player in his prime comes to negotiate what is often their last contract, he would not have got anywhere near that money if there wasn't another bidder.
It's a good point, Jim.
As soon as you hit free agency, which is often when you're right at the best, you know, form of your life, you can go to market, Danger, whoever it is, and you can ask for a fortune, and the club you're at have to match it.
Although I heard Neil Baum, the football director at Richmond, say only the other day on air that he thinks it's got to go.
Well, of course he does, because the clubs hate it for this exact reason, but the players absolutely love it.
They do, and the Richmond players obviously love the outcome of what happened too, Jim. They gathered at Trent Cotchin's house to watch the interview unfold, and this is Dan Butler speaking yesterday at the Rising Star about that.
Yeah, Dusty was there as well, so we kind of went and congratulated him all, and we'll watched his interview together, so it was good.
So Dusty was there watching his own interview?
He left the room when it was on, but all of us watched it.
Roger Bike Shorts Vaughan there asking the question about Dusty leaving the room. But look, they obviously knew in advance that he was going to say yes. He wouldn't be gathering at Trent Cotchin's house. I wouldn't have thought to do it, but clearly, as much as we said before, there was a strong confidence that he'd stay until he did, and it was only absolutely official Thursday afternoon, Duck, that he was going to stay. It was not done. Jim, the Chris Mayne situation at Collingwood, let's just have a chat about this at the moment. It's got really, really messy. Let's go back, though, to Nathan Buckley on SEN. The voice you'll also hear, too, is Gary Lyon asking questions of Nathan Buckley about this Chris Mayne situation, and then we'll take it further in a few moments.
There was a few things mixed up with that, because our director of footy was flickering around, and there was a few things that happened in there that weren't ideal. And it's been a tough year for Maney, and we've got some decisions to make going forward with that. But that hasn't been a great result in the first 12 months. Three.
You've got three more. Right. So you potentially sit down and negotiate with him now about maybe an out?
Maney is currently playing VFL 42 and has been first class with his attitude and his commitment to the club and the team, as we knew he would be. So, but at an AFL level, that hasn't been either what he or we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Love the openness, love the honesty. That's what you get from Nathan Buckley. But when you've got someone, Brownie, contracted until the end of 2020, and you use the phrase, we've got some decisions to make. We saw the question there from Gary at the right time, and then the evasive answer as well. It's a pretty ugly
situation. 3 years to go. You can't see Chris Mayne on the back of those comments playing too much footy next year. So what does he do? Because
you take the money. He's very keen. Give me the money and I'll catch you
later.
But
he's keen to play on. He wants to play on. And he doesn't want the money.
Well, one thing he doesn't do is he doesn't do any deal to dilute the money.
No.
He can't.
Colin Young is Chris Mayne's manager, and not for the first time. He has maintained that Nathan Buckley actually drove the decision to get Chris Mayne to the Collingwood Footy Club. There's a washing of hands of this situation, guys, which is actually playing out in an ugly way in the eyes of people around Chris Mayne. Chris himself, his dad, we saw, went social media-wise last night responding to Nathan Buckley's comments. And Colin Young today wouldn't come on, but was happy to provide this statement to Triple M, and that is that Gubby Allen made it very clear before the meeting that if Nathan Buckley wants him, he's in. He said if Bucks didn't want him, he's not in. At the meeting, Chris and Bucks hit it off. Gubby rang me after the meeting and said he's in. What he is saying there is that, and he said this before, he's adamant that this is the case. Nathan Buckley, as much as anyone at Collingwood, drove this decision to get Chris Mayne in. There was an offer from Fremantle, his then current club. There was an offer from another club. The financial requirements or arrangements around those offers was very similar. He ended up going with Collingwood on the back of the Nathan Buckley wooing. And that's the washing of the hand situation that the main camp don't like.
I would say to that, does it matter? Why does it matter who rubber stamped it? I don't quite get that.
Well, Nathan's clearly trying to wash hands of having someone who's on $2 million over 4 years. Now, he may be entitled to wash hands, but the other side of the story is, well, no, you were part of this decision to bring him in at $2 million over the 4 years and then don't play him, basically, for the entirety of the first year.
So what do you want to happen to Bucks as a result? What, you want a penalty for him or something?
No, I just, as always, BT, there's two sides to every story, and then you've got the truth in the middle somewhere, and the main camp is not moving away. But when you sign someone up for 4 years and don't play him for the almost the entirety of the first of those 4 years, it's a very strange situation.
There were significant industry eyebrows raised in the off-season at the list management decisions made by Collingwood. Well, that's fair to say.
Correct.
Lyndon Dunn, Daniel Wells, Chris Mayne, everyone from a lot of people from outside looked at it and said, well, what are you saying about where your list's at? What are you saying about the next 4 years? Are you saying you're ready to go? Because otherwise, why would you get those blokes in and commit to them long-term on big money, especially Mayne and Wells? I mean, Wells is being paid big dough too.
Massive money. Or so, compared with what North was prepared to offer.
Yeah, so you look at it and go, hey, mate, superstar player, by the way, but a lot of people would look at that and say, oh, well, that tells you that you think you're ready to really go launch somewhere.
Win a premiership.
Yeah, because otherwise, why would you bring 30-year-old blokes in on big money for, the way? So I reckon that's a bit of
where
this is at, too.
But at the same time, Nathan Buckley's allowed to change his mind once he gets there and sees how he plays football and the fact that he wasn't able to get on the end of it. He wasn't able to put forward pressure on. That's what he got him there too. So he's well within his rights to say, yeah, we got him here, but if he's not going to be in our best team, he's not going to play.
And the dynamic of Nathan Buckley and Graham Allen, who, as we know, was forced out of footy on the back of the Lachie Whitfield situation, Duck, at the previous club he was at, GWS. There's still some talk that he may come back, but I would think that after what Nathan Buckley has said there, that there is no chance, given that Nathan Buckley's re-signed and that the whole premise around this review is to bolster the positions around him. If Nathan Buckley now is making comments of that nature, which fly in the face of what other people are saying about happened at that meeting when Chris Mayne was being wooed, I can't see now Gubby Allen being back there at Collingwood.
All right, we need to take a break. We've got Tell Me Something I Don't Know coming, Bristle.
Yes, we
you
have.
You and the end of that.
By the way, I just received a text that just our question about Dusty Martin and will he appear on the footy show as a part of this whole package deal. And I'm told that the thought process there is a very, very positive one that will appear next year on the footy show.
Oh, well, we should look at our massive nosed producer. He runs the footy show now. Yeah, he should be able to tell us. Well, there, look at him go to ground. And it's hard for him to go to ground because he ends up with this sort of periscope piling up out of the ground. Now, tell us something you don't know is a nice thing we do here, Bristle, where we actually tell the people listening well before anyone's even aware of it what's happening in the AFL landscape.
Yeah, we do. And look, I've just got a little treat for all of us here. involves you, JB.
Oh, no.
But I am told that JB would have noticed, the four of us would have noticed, that walking in the studio today, he's got a slight limp and he's been whinging and complaining about his gout that he's got over the last couple of weeks. And
don't have gout.
You know, it's nothing more than gout, but he's wanting to go to all sorts of sports docs and surgeons. And, you know, it's got to be a sports injury. I'm a sportsman. I'm James Brayshaw sort of things. But it's just gout. I am led to believe that on his most recent visit in the Richmond medical area up there on Richmond Hill, that
where all the sports people go.
Yeah, all the sports people go there. And
Bridge Road Imaging, our man.
JB walked in and thought, oh, well, and they all thought, well, he's here to do some sort of journalistic story. But no, he was there for his own sports injury. I'm told he was told to put a boot on immediately. Such was the stress of the injury.
That's it, yep. Brizzle.
But the stress of his work was even greater that he couldn't possibly walk in here today with a boot on because he knew we would absolutely give it to him. So no boot for JB.
That
but
is true.
When he leaves the studio today, I believe the boot is waiting in the car.
That is true. The thought, Duck, of walking in here with a moon boot, I said to the bloke, mate, that ain't happening. He said, no, your specialist appointment's next week. You need to have this on between now and then. I said, mate, it ain't happening. So I don't care if it breaks in half.
It's a serious bout of gout.
Oh, no. Oh, boy. I wish it was.
What
gout,
have you got, Brownie?
Oh, I've got a couple that have come out of the same incident. Last week on Friday Night Footy, we said that BT, Richo, and Luke Darcy were going to appear in some sort of acting debut at a company that I belong to. And BT and Richo, to start with, had agreed to a certain figure, but then Darce came back and said, I actually work for more than that. This is my figure, which tended to be double what BT and Richo had already agreed to.
Gee,
and then the email came back saying after, we'll just decline, we'll just go forward with Brian and Richo. And then the email came back from a Channel 7 staffer about Luke Darcy, just to say that if it's okay, Luke's had a rethink. And he's happy to go at the same rate as the other two.
This is not his best week, Jim.
Now, we know this part of it, but what we don't know is that I've seen the final cut, and there's an NRL and an AFL version, and then there's a version where you put them all together, so it's a three-minute version.
Right.
And I did not see Luke Darcy anywhere on the
final
version.
So he hasn't made the cut.
Does that mean he doesn't get paid? Well, I think have you been paid yet, Brian?
Look, I have.
Yeah, okay, well. But on that day, there was a suit left there, and I couldn't figure out whose it was. It was a Peter Jackson suit bag.
Lightweight joke.
And there was three of them. Obviously, those two other guys are fairly big boys, and obviously Brian's a large man sitting here looking at me. So I couldn't figure out, and I didn't know that suits went that large to start with, as I was trying to figure out whose suit bag it was. But on the inside, all the tabs had been cut off. So it was a man who was quite vain that didn't want to know how big the suit was, and they'd all been cut off on the inside. So I had to rifle through the pockets to see if there was any sort of remnants
there
of
might
who
have been
identification.
Was there an envelope in there?
Luckily, there wasn't. Not that I'll tell you anyway, but there, I went through, and there was a small little mirror in one of the pockets. I thought, now, who, out of these three, how do these three people, who would have a mirror? And I went, Darcy, pretty vain. It could likely be him. Richo, just as vain. And I thought, Brian, well, all three, and I'm no clearer on whose jacket this was now. So, but then I dug a little bit deeper, and there was this tiny little comb, like a little toothpick type comb. It had two spokes on it. And then I put that together with the mirror, and I could only ascertain that this was for a moustaka. Brian carries around his moustaka little comb and a mirror.
Not true.
That's Brereton-esque.
I wouldn't leave one of my best suits there. By the way, boys, I know you've got more stuff to tell us down there, Duck and Damo, but just hot off the press, the great Matthew Richardson, who remains unmarried at the age of 42, but is and has a partner, Jen.
Is and has.
They've had a little girl this morning.
Oh, so, that's great. Well done.
Congratulations to Richo and Jen. Finally coughed it up.
Yeah, oh, well done, Richo.
Well done, Big Show.
He actually said to me a couple of days ago, oh, I think she's going to go over. She'll be, Mr. Expert Richo. I know. Well done.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic work.
Yeah, he's a, what a great man Big Joe is. Remember that week we had in New York, Brownie?
I do.
I've never seen a bloke. Like, you can walk around Duck, can't you, around New York pretty anonymously.
Yes.
Unless you're Matty Richardson. You know, people just came from everywhere. And it was ridiculous. I thought, Joe, this can't happen everywhere. Like, if you go to Sudan, surely you don't get people piling in. He goes, mate, everywhere I go.
And you know when you go out with guys that are 6'6", normally they can handle their liquor a little bit when you go out. He's one bloke who cannot. Cannot. And he's a big man who sticks out like a beacon with his lips.
Yeah. Now, Gary Ablett is fascinating in the landscape of what's going to happen in the next couple of months. And, Duck, you've got a little bit of intel on it.
Yes. Well, as we know, there's, well, Damo will get to the newsy part of it. But last night, BT, the one thing that you do is you just keep your ear to the ground. And a few people were talking last night about Gary Ablett going to train. What are you at his training facility?
Butchered this.
At his training facility. Three or four times a week, and Gary Ablett.
So Daryl White's at this training facility.
Oh, well, I didn't want to say who it was. Sorry. But anyway, Daryl White goes to he goes to the Gold Coast training facility quite a bit, and he said he's seen Gary Ablett Jr. in there by himself training like he's never seen anyone train. He reckons he's absolutely smashing it out in the gym. And he's there every single time he goes there. So that's
what did that mean to the person who told you?
Well, to him and to me when he was telling me, that says this is a man that is
not
possessed
done.
And not done and 100% wants to play footy and get back to his absolute best
but
next year.
But isn't playing with the side that he should be playing with.
Couldn't get it together to play with the side that he's with.
But clearly, clearly this is a man that clearly does okay not to want play. To retain.
Soft tissue, Brownie, you can't.
Purple.
No, for sure.
You speak to anyone attached to the Geelong Football Club and they are convinced he's playing there next year. There's not even any doubt in their mind that he's going
to
play there.
They're posturing publicly, Jim, to allow it to happen in a way that is going to be difficult no matter what does unfold. But the timeline on it now is he had an exit meeting on Tuesday of the week just gone. Mark Evans, the chief executive officer, sat in on it, and it was unusual, BT, because he doesn't sit in on all the meetings, but he did sit on in this one. No claim by Gary at that time to say, I want to leave, but the best and fairest of that club is tonight. He's won three of those best and fairest awards. He will most likely finish top five, could well finish top three. If he finishes top three, we'll need to get the microphone and speak to the crowd. There won't be an announcement by people according to what they're telling me. But at some stage, to fitting with what you're saying, Jim, of the next week to 10 days, he will be saying to that footy club, I'm out or want to be out, and I want you to get me to Geelong. And we know, as we've been saying for some time, that's when it gets official and that's when the hardball stance from the Suns kicks in.
You think that'll be driven by Tony Cochran?
No, it'll be driven by Mark Evans.
Mark Evans.
And Mark Evans has made it clear to Ablett himself that they are going to play hardball. And the hardball starting point from the Suns' perspective is to for Geelong to pay his full wage, which is about $500,000 to $600,000. This is the key, though, for Geelong to orchestrate a trade player into the Suns. It doesn't have to be a Geelong player, but someone they want, and for Geelong to pay that wage of that player. So $1 million of wages, and obviously a player as well, is what their starting point is. And listening to Mark Evans and the way I hear it, that will be what he doesn't deviate away from.
What did you make of the bit of vision that we saw during the week of the Gold Coast last game, in the rooms, players doing their warm down and stretch down, and Tony Cochran, the president, looked to be giving them a nice old serve while they were warming down, which is highly unusual that a president would be granted that space to do that sort of thing, JB.
Yeah,
it's a very rare thing that would happen.
Yep.
Mark Evans standing close by, and it almost looked like Mark Evans all of a sudden clicked, hey, the cameras could be watching this. I better go and whisper in Tony's ear. Mm. Is that what?
That's effectively what did happen. It was after they'd kicked three goals, two only, for the entire game against Port Adelaide BT. He was doing that. Again, depending on who you speak to, it was either a bit of a berating of the players or a general, let's stick together, let's work harder. Either way, it was unusual, as you point out. And yes, 100% Mark Evans did intervene and point out that
You wonder whether he got permission off the footy staff to do that.
No, there wasn't.
He wouldn't think he needs it.
Mm. And he had been at the footy on that day and chose to do it.
Well, I think you've got to go back to Jeff Kennett, the last time a president just wandered into the inner sanctum, the footy department, and had his say.
Did you ever feel the need to?
Never.
Post-match?
No. Not the right, exactly the wrong place, for a president to say.
I go back to the early Richmond days when the directors used to juice up a bit and have a good day. Yeah. But Graham Richmond, the famous power broker at Richmond that so many people hear, so many people talk about, he wasn't a drinker at all, but he used to come in and he could speak whenever he wanted. So that was interesting.
Okay, interestingly enough too, Jacob Hopper has officially today announced that he'll be staying with the GWS team for another 2 years. Geelong was very interested in him, Jim. So too was Carlton. North Melbourne had put out some feelers. Other clubs had too, Duck. An elite talent. They've got him now for 2018 and 19. And the one they're waiting for now is obviously Josh Kelly. And
what about little Dave Smith?
He's also a target of the Geelong Footy Club, probably more so than others.
And a Geelong boy?
Geelong boy.
All right, now we've already, the social media goes nuts, Bristol, when we do this, because everyone listens. It's an extraordinary listening base we have, millions, not only here in Melbourne, but worldwide. And one of them is Wayno from down in Bitten, who just was listening before and has already, Nave, put the inquiry in. Something I don't know. What was that Duck was trying to say? So we've gone back and had a listen ourselves. Here you go, Wayno.
Do it.
Hope that's cleared it up.
I had BT sitting over there going something like this. I don't know what I was doing.
It's a bit like Diddy Jim from BT. The Good Sports.
In fact, I'd be of the opinion that if we sort of had to reboot this show in the off-season, we could just put Hose in as the producer and she could panel at the same time.
Yep.
Then we could get rid of Snorkel permanently. What we need to do is speak to Luke Hodge, who's a superstar and, of course, part of the Triple M footy family. Now finished his glorious career. And so much has already been said about that, Nath, that we don't have to go through it again. Norm Smith medals times two and four-time premiership captain and all the rest of the stuff we know. So what we need to find out is what he's been up to since his glorious career is finished, because something came across my desk, Duck, that I quite simply don't believe.
Yep.
And that is that the final Mad Monday of one of the great Mad Mondayers, the boy from the Western Districts, Luke Hodge, might have gone slightly the wrong way. Hodgie, are you on the line?
Yes, mate, I'm here.
Is this true?
Mate, well, on Mad Monday, the club had meetings and stuff, so we went out for a bit of a feed.
They wouldn't have bothered you, though, because you retired.
Yeah, I stayed in bed. I slept the whole day. But the next day, the Tuesday, the boys caught up, and we caught up the old Rising Sun and had a few beers, but there was nothing out of the ordinary.
What was your input into that?
I got there at very similar time as the other boys, and I...
Yeah, but what time did you leave?
I left about 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. 10 p.m. Mm. Mightn't have started till 4, but I got hit down with a bit of tonsillitis after the first two nights, and I was no good. The body can't handle it anymore.
Tonsillitis. The great Luke Hodge was flattened by tonsillitis.
Hey, JB, don't you start. I saw you walking in a moon boot yesterday. What's wrong with you?
I haven't got the boot yet, Hodgie. I'm putting it off.
You sure?
Yes, only because I knew I'd run into blokes like you, and I couldn't stand the thought of having to explain it to a superstar.
Mate, so, I'll prefer tonsillitis and walking around in a moon boot, mate.
Now, Hodgie, is it also... that's right. Now, is it also true that you guys, after your final game, I think it was at Etihad Stadium, yes, it was, that you guys stayed there very, very late that night just to enjoy each other's company? I'm talking about in the rooms and in your football attire.
The club sort of said, what do you want to do? And I wasn't really that keen on getting changed and going to pubs. So it was pretty much, I said, I'd prefer just to sit back in the rooms and enjoy a beer or two with a few of the boys. And end up, we sat around there long into the night. And yeah, I think we ended up having a shower. I think it was in the early hours of the next morning, and then went and caught up with the boys from there. But I think that was one of the last things I want to do. It was the last time I was going to be able to play with the guys. So sitting back having a few beers that he had was high on the priority.
How did the younger boys go with that? I'd imagine there would have been a few itchy ones just trying to get out. They just finished their season. Hodgie, a few young boys want to hit the town?
They were showered and dressed by the time we walked into the coaches' meeting. you could sort of see that Ruff, Gunners, myself, Strato, a few of the boys sat around and were happy to stay. As soon as Clarko finished, they grabbed a beer and they kept looking at their watch. They were more than happy to go to a pub and enjoy what's out in the town rather than sit back and talk to some old guys.
This Michael Clarke sort of Simon Caddish style
business.
I had no issues with the boys wanting to go. It was more for the older guys if they wanted to sit around. But you could sort of see the younger guys that wanted to do put the gel in the hair and go and see what's going on compared to the older guys were happy to sit back, have a beer and just talk crap for a couple of hours.
Hey, Hodgy, a feature of the Rising Star lunch and day is the speech made by a former player to that year's intake. And you were that person yesterday. Without asking you to reveal everything you said to the gathering, you had a strong message about the learnings of your own, of yourself, throughout your time in the game. Can you just snapshot that for our listeners now, please?
It was more so about just learning along the way. If you make a mistake, learn from it. Make sure you listen to the older guys. They're there to help you. It's well known that I took a long time to probably understand what it took to play AFL football. And a lot of those guys, and now you see McGrath who won yesterday and how he spoke, how advanced the players are these days compared to what it was when we went through. They're that much more ahead of what where we were.
Hodgie, can you see yourself drifting back into that little sort of pudginess that you came into the game with now that you've retired?
I'll try not to. But mind you, a few of the boys have commented that at our reunion next year, I'll be bigger than Stuart Jew. That's a good 30 kilos in about 6 months. So, I'll try. I've got a few mates, and I think you learn as you go. You learn what you can and can't eat. No doubt the jeans will get tight at some stage, but hopefully I'm smart enough to, or disciplined enough to keep it off.
Hodgie, when you finished your final game, had you been worded up by anyone, or did you finish and turn around and suddenly see Luke Ball and Chris Judd and think, what the hell are you two doing here?
I may have been worded up. But mind you, there was that many things that got thrown around that week, which we sort of shut down and said yes or no. So I didn't know what was actually going to happen. So it was good to have a chat to Ball and Jody. Jody actually looked a bit nervous out there.
I thought he did.
How did you feel about his questioning was?
I thought Judge Jody was well more advanced than his questioning out there after the game. I actually thought he was nervous. For the first time ever, I had Jody on the footy field. I thought he was a little bit nervous.
I'm told he was late in getting down onto the ground. He thought he was... Well, as Hodgie said, Judge Duddy, and he could just access anywhere. And I'm told that he got held up at several gates on the way through.
I thought Luke Ball was the pick of the two of them.
Are you working for anyone anywhere over the final series, Hodgie?
I'm actually doing the Sydney Essendon game with Channel 7 up there, so... It should be good. I'm on the phone, buddy. I'm doing a little bit looking after the kids as well. Channel 7 have given me a go at calling the Sydney Essendon game. So hopefully Bud can do a little bit of the same as what he did last week.
And New York Marathon is in your sights for next year?
I think that's had a bit more airtime than what I was expected. I went for a run the other day and the body didn't like it. The knee seized up. And that was after about 6K. So there's only an extra 36 on top of it. But I've got a few mates that are doing it, which hopefully gets us all through.
And Gibbo interests me, Hodgie. He's turned into a leather chap wearing, a Kubra hat wearing, weirdo horse freak.
I was a fair surprise last year when the boys said that Gibbo's got photos up on his Instagram of him riding horses, where he hadn't spoken about horses his whole career. So I'm not sure where that came from, but I think it's a passion. It was a way for him to get away from football, but it did take a few of the boys by shock.
Well, it's a little bit like you, Hodgie, with the Speedway, because I'm the voice of Speedway here in Australia, particularly when it comes to the Grand Prix world scene, Damo.
Yeah.
I'm told you love Speedway, a la Jason Crump, Chris Holder, Jason Doyle style.
I'd say it's more my son takes over than myself. Every time we come into... to the TV, he's always got some form of racing on the TV. So I'd say Coop's got the obsession a little bit more than what I do.
Your love of it too, Hodgie, may be genuine or organic, whereas BT's is purely commercial.
Well, no, it's coming up at Etihad Stadium very soon.
Correctly.
And you've got to deal
with Etihad Stadium.
Hey, Hodgie, can you just ask Coops whether he wants to meet Luke Hodge?
Yeah, he's nicely been asked that before and denied it. So the duck was nice enough to ask Coop if he'd love to see Luke Hodges, and Coop said, why? That's Dad.
And that was outside the Triple M studio, wasn't it?
I thought I was just being a nice guy.
Hodgie, the other thing now that you finished playing footy is you always have told me, without any sort of, you know, even having any humour in it, how good a cricketer you were and the fact that you could easily have played for Victoria and probably pushed on even beyond that. Are you, now that you're not playing footy, going to actually pull the creams on and show us whether you would have been any good?
Mate, I'll be... pulling on the creams, I'll be playing basketball. As far as how good I'll be, I don't think I'll be any good at all. My body can't Let me do anything. I might be slogging the bat, but other than that, standing at first slip. But I think one thing is, as soon as I finished footy, it was all about catch up with mates, having either hit a cricket, hit a golf, or game of basketball with a few mates, and maybe even kick a footy with them at some stage next year.
Beauty, mate. Well, enjoy the rest of your first weekend free, and we look forward to catching up soon.
Cheers, guys. Have a good day.
Hi, I'm Mark Boris. Every single day in Australia, people are busting their guts in starting and running their own businesses. It's a big deal. 60% of Australians are hired by small to medium-sized business owners. These guys are doing their bit, buying stock, hiring people, and paying their taxes. So what is it like to start your own business? How do you go from just running a business on the side after work to owning something much bigger? How do you make it your future? Join me on The Mentor, a weekly show on Podcast One where I speak to Aussie business owners who are working through just that. I find out what makes them tick. I help them work out their next steps for their growth and for their future.
The Mentor with Mark Burris. Listen now at podcastone.com.au or download the Podcast One app.
We need to get behind our leaders. We need to tackle fiercely. We need to protect our mates. We reckon we can win this game.
Ducks, top 10 paganisms.
Nearly strong as one.
All right. One of the great coaches of all time, Dennis Pagan, took the North Melbourne Footy Club to 7 straight prelim finals, 3 grand finals, a very strong man.
And he was just a great,
media hater.
Media hater, but at the same time, provided plenty for them, didn't he?
He did.
Because he was great with the quotes and the one-liners and, the sayings. He was absolutely fantastic.
And still got enormous charisma to this day.
There's no doubt about that.
It's amazing.
One of the very funny men. Doesn't try to be funny, just naturally funny. Yep. So I'll start off, given that I'm in the media and about media.
Can you put it in like you're him?
Right now, he'd be saying, I tell you what, son, you're not going down Media Street, are you? So that's an obvious one. Yeah, and then if I was sort of lacking a little bit of confidence, Brownie, which
never
say this to me too often, but he'd say to guys, hey, son, do you think you just go down to Puckle Street and just grab a jar of confidence? And then he'd say to players that he thought were lying to him about anything in particular, their form or what they got up to off the ground, he'd say, you're not pissing down my back, son, and telling me it's raining, are you? And then he said this one specifically to, we're talking to John Longmire later, to his assistant coach, John Blakey. He said, Blakes was just sort of playing nice footy. He said, John, you're a beautiful man. You're a lovely kid. You're gorgeous. You're the sort of bloke I'd love to marry my daughter, but are you going to do something? The one meter test, he'd say, son, you might have the Southern Aurora coming that way, the Overlander coming that way, but are you going to go and get the footy, son? You're going to the 1 meter test. Kingy,
what's the 1 meter test? Is it like get
the footy?
Close.
Yeah, 1 meter. So state of origin, players would play state of origin and then sort of come back and sort of be strolling.
Against the club, sort of.
Yeah, no, strolling around. And Dennis didn't like state of origin too much, so he'd go, I tell you what, son, since you've come back from state of origin, you've got a size 10 hat, but a size 14 head. And then he loved this one. When people start, he'd hear players sort of having a little bit of a go at one another, he'd say, you know what, son? You argue with fools. And soon people can't tell the difference. So love that one.
I get the feeling Duck's enjoying his own.
Footy doesn't build character. It just eliminates the weak ones. And this is one of my all-time favourites. He's talking about, I remember we're all sitting there. I remember this one specifically. So this is my absolute favourite. When he's and Anthony Rock's sitting in front of me and Scholey's there and Croc's there. And he's gone, courage. There's three types of courage. There's expected courage. When, peer group pressure, you're just expected to go. So you do it. Said, then there's Dutch courage when you're affected by alcohol or drugs. And we're going, that's you, Rocky. And then he goes, then there's resolved courage when you know the consequences, but you still follow through with the act. what sort of courage do you guys want? We all sort of look at Rocky and go, well, we know Rocky's got a lot of Dutch. He hasn't got much of the other. Is that 10? I think that's 10.
Very nicely done. Very nicely done.
Just, you know, because you were the... with the king. So did you waltz around in there, you know, and did, how did you handle the locker room situation? Because you would have strutted
He had a great ability to bring me down by embarrassing me in front of the group in the manner of, he'd, you know, he'd grab Mick Martin and say, Mick, you can't go out like the champ. You can't go out like the champ and still perform, son. You've got to be doing everything right. And then the day where he called all the team leaders into the one room and said, you know, your form, you're up and down like a yo-yo. You're no good, Rocky, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, there's only one bloke in here that can go out and still perform. We know who that is. He goes, so all the rest of you, you just can't. So we walk out and the boys just gave it to me. Steve, call me Steve Seagal, above the law, all of this sort of stuff. So he had a great ability to do that, to embarrass me, so therefore...
Did he ever have to call upon you? Can you remember in a game where perhaps you weren't playing well or the team wasn't playing well, and he absolutely, can you ever remember him absolutely putting it on the line to you, saying that we need you now more than ever? Did that ever happen?
Yeah, it did. But he could do that with a look. I reckon the one that stands out for me, and it's sort of got a little bit of a funny ending. We were playing Fremantle, and we were near the top of the ladder. They were near the bottom of the ladder. And the start of the 98 season, I started the year off at centre-half back. He had this thing, right, we're going to play you centre-half back now, that, you know, build on defence and all this sort of stuff. So we were down at half-time against Frio and down by a bit. And he said, listen, son, we're going to put you back to centre-half forward. I kicked 7 in the second half and he came up to me after the game and he grabbed me,
yeah.
Said, I ever play you at centre half back again, punch me fair in the mouth.
Hey, Duck, another one was that 93 season. It was a Friday night game against Essendon, and you were down 4 or 5 goals at three quarter time. And he quoted some war general of some note.
Yeah, he just had this. I always stood at the back of the huddle. I never stood anywhere near the front because he used to get a bit of spray when he when he got angry, and you didn't want to be at the front because you're right in his eye line. But I'd stand at the back, and he would search for you. If he wanted you to lift, he would just search for you, look at you, and just sort of give you the nod, and you knew what he wanted to do. And he was so much like a father figure. You know, when you're a kid, you want to impress your dad. That's exactly the effect that he had on the group. You just wanted to perform for him.
That State of Origin, you know, blokes coming back from State of Origin footy, that would have been 100% aimed at Craig Scholl, otherwise known as the Doctor, who made his debut for Victoria in one of those Tuesday night games against South Australia at Football Park. First kick for Victoria. Attempted an on-the-run barrel that went 15 rows into the crowd. And he copped, because we're all great mates of the Doctor, he copped it from every single one of us. Stick to what you can do.
At Bright these days, running a caravan park.
He is, and mind you, did finish his career with 7 goals in a preliminary final, yeah. Craig.
And has let us all know about it ever since.
He's a very good player.
Well, it's probably just as important to start your career with 7.
Oh, hello.
Oh. No, I didn't. No,
six?
Yeah, I can't remember now.
Oh, yes, you can, Bristol.
No, I got belted.
This time of year, it is events, Barrett. There's nothing you don't attend this time of year, Purple, it's fair to say.
There's a bit going on, Jim. Mm-hmm. And the Rising Star luncheon yesterday, it was really good.
Yeah, you like that one. I want to get to the All-Australian. Yeah, we spoke about this on the rush hour.
We did.
My mail duck from a lot of people who attended is it was the worst function ever.
Really?
Yep.
Why?
It wasn't.
Why?
Food didn't arrive, Naif, till 10:15.
No, but you had 2 courses.
Men in the room.
Courses, Jim, until
big
that
men drinking. Drinking and hungry and no food of any consequence, Bristol, till 10:15.
And the one thing that sat uncomfortably with me watching it, I felt uncomfortable for the players selected on the basis that they had a panel there after they'd been announced. almost saying,
critiquing.
Gee, does he deserve to be in that spot when it could have been this bloke? I just thought that was a little bit disrespectful of those that had been selected.
Yeah, yep. I'm strong on that, BT, and it's happened a while, and I don't want it to be a media versus media issue, but I feel it's significant enough, Brownie, to have in isolation an announcement of the team and a celebration of that moment. And then it's pertinent to ask questions, and I think we need to as an industry ask why so-and-so got in on the expense of someone else, but make it outside.
Not on the night.
Not on the night. Well, it can be on the night, but even outside the room. Confines of the room particularly, and outside the confines of the presentation to the public via the media program that night. I just think it needs to be done. I think the AFL really needs to step in. Because
there's some discretion within how that's discussed, so the players who have been picked don't hear it.
Yeah, because it's in the room. I mean, Michael Hibbert had to stand there and listen to it. Sam Doherty had his credentials questioned. Again, I reckon they're valid questions, and I'm not saying don't do that, but
don't do them on the night.
Not at the same moment the half-back line has been announced. And I'm big on that, BT. Yep. I think it's a good point you raised.
Yeah, so that's a broadcast thing. I'm more talking about an in-room experience, Bevel.
I can tell you, there was mud crab as an entree. It was very nice. Yeah, there was a duck offering as a secondary dish.
It was something you could fit on a spoon, the mud crab, is what I
hear. It was small.
These are big men, Nafe, who are hungry.
They were quality food, Jim. And sometimes you can be a little bit ungrateful about it.
10:15.
10:15 until any food of substance arrived. All I know is that City Hall can disappear up their own freckle when they put on something they think's world class and tell everybody. So they've also got to accept when they completely stuff it up.
You would have liked the wines. They were very high-end wines.
Is that what you go for, JB, the food? You know, you want the food served on time.
I would have thought if you're going to a function, Bristol, you could expect food to arrive before 10:15.
You need a good food,
Brian. It had, Jim. It was a three-course meal, and the first two courses were substantial.
The NAB Rising Star, anyone got any issues with the winner?
No, I
thought that either he or Burton would have been very worthy.
Yeah, I would have been happy if Charlie Kurnow had won it as well.
Yeah. I was going to say, do we think out of this season that Kurnow might be the person who emerges over McGrath, Burton and Hipwood?
He'll be the star.
And Powell Pepper?
He's going to be the centre forward, centre back, call it what you like. He's going to be the guy that was going to win games off his own boot.
Go into the middle.
Yeah.
He's going to be the one.
He will play a little bit midfield too. Yeah. McGrath's going to turn into a really good midfielder, but I reckon Charlie Kurnow, he's going to be the turnstile guy.
Mm-hmm. Injury watch is obviously going into next weekend, and the main ones are on Selwood, whose lower leg issue is significant enough to have mere mortals missing for the remainder of the year. But he is going to do everything he possibly can to get there.
So do you risk it, Duck, given they're a double chance team? Do you, because he will be on the edge, you know, that he'll be go right to the wire on this. So do you risk Joel Selwood knowing you've got the double chance?
I wouldn't risk him the first week. I'd give him, because obviously if they lose, they get another week and maybe an extra 2 weeks if they win. So I would hold him back.
The talk coming out of the camp, to use that word in inverted commas, BT, after they defeated GWS in that last game was that he would be missing that first final. Now, that was out of the camp, but he himself, though, was counter to that. He was going to do everything he possibly could. But I reckon they'll be conservative.
It is important to have targets for players to try and make. I spoke to Dr. Gary Zimmerman about this at the Western Bulldogs on the back of last year's success with the Dogs. Liberatore.
They had a lot of injuries going into that final series.
Morris. They were all set targets that hadn't been achieved before, but they felt that it gave the players something to work forward to and it gave them a reason to really go for it. So that's important.
AFLW, big game tonight. The Big V against the All-Stars, or the Allies, I think they're called. And what it basically is, Nafe, is the best of the best,
the best of the best game. Jim.
And the same thing happened last year, but it was, of course, Melbourne and the Western Bulldogs, given where the AFLW was going at the end of that season. So it's the same concept, but this time Big V and Allies. And if you saw any of the game last year, it was quite extraordinary. The skill and the speed that was on display, the best women playing our game, is just extraordinary. Captain of Victoria joins us now, Daisy Pearce. Daisy, welcome.
Thanks, JB. Thanks, boys.
I encourage everyone to watch this game tonight because, as I say, it's under the roof, the conditions are perfect, and the skill and speed last year, if it's anything like that, Daisy, it will be extraordinary.
Yeah, I think so, and even might have gone up a gear with the experiences we had through AFLW. We've all learnt more and more about football as the year's gone on, and I think everyone's pretty hungry to put on a good show. But then this year as well, there's a real feeling to it, I think, because we get the honour of wearing that traditional blue and white Big V jumper and representing our state.
Huge viewing numbers too. I know Seven do a great job of broadcasting it. And the numbers last year were enormous. So you girls would be aware of just how many people tune in.
Yeah, absolutely. We were blown away by the response, not just for this exhibition game at about the same time last year, but throughout the whole AFLW series. It was, just a great feeling to know that people loved watching us play football. So hopefully they tune in big numbers again tonight or come down to Etihad Stadium because it's free entry. I'm hoping it's the biggest crowd I will have ever played in front of. So looking forward to it.
I know you're prime, Daisy, and from all reports you are at peak fitness and ready to go and you really are motivated to do well. But is there someone that may jump out of the box that perhaps we haven't heard of that you think might surprise a few tonight?
Probably someone that didn't get a great look in at AFLW level last year was Katie Brennan. She's an absolute star and was the captain of the Western Bulldogs, but had a pretty injury-interrupted and frustrating season. So for those that tuned in last year and started picking their favourite players, that she might have not jumped out to them, but I think she'll certainly jump out tonight. She's back at full fitness and I think she's kicked 20 goals in the last 3 weeks in the VFL. So she's in good form and should play well tonight. Hopefully not too well, though. I think one of my teammates at Melbourne might get the job on her, Melissa Hickey, and they always have a pretty fiery contest.
Daisy, you were big news before the AFLW was big news. You're the original. You're still the best. You're the number one player in that league. We've got the number one player of all time, Duck, in here at the moment. But You are the number one girl player of all time in AFLW. Do you just walk out there tonight and just think, I can flick a switch at any point of this night and I can get us home?
Unlike Duck, I probably have to disagree with you and say I'm not the best player to ever have played and don't think that when I run out there. But
Unlike Duck.
Hey, Daisy, I don't agree with Brownie either, but I'm glad I'm in the conversation.
Yeah, look, it's great to have your name thrown out there, but to be honest, I'm so well aware of how many great players there are and I'll be well and truly aware of it tonight. I think it's a great thing. Even we had our one and only training session together yesterday and so many players that you used to kind of losing sleep over the night before you play against them. It was so nice to come into the huddles after each drill and think, oh, she's going to be on my team. So, it's going to be wonderful not just playing with them, but as you said, pitting yourself against those best players is why we all play, to see where you're at. And above all else, hopefully we get a win for the Victorian side.
Speaking with Daisy Pearce, the skipper of Victoria. Daisy, just want to tell us a little bit about your mental preparation. Are you one that gets really nervous? Do you play on fear of failure?
Yeah, I think that certainly plays a part. I get pretty nervous and over the years I think I've just learnt to not try and fight it. I don't see them as a bad thing anymore. It's just a good time that you care and that you want to do well and that you're invested, which I think are really powerful things. Not just in the build-up and how you prepare yourself, but when you get out there on game day, I think the more nervous you are, the more invested you are and the more you're going to give. So I've just stopped trying to fight them and almost embrace them as a good thing. But, yeah, I really struggled a bit through AFLW playing all these night matches. We hadn't had much experience with them in the past. And then, again, with the 7:40 start tonight, it's sort of hard for me not to run my race throughout the day and overthink it. So I've had to try and come up with ways to be a bit more cool and I guess keep my mind off it throughout the day so that I'm not burnt out by the time I finally get out there. But I'll certainly be nervous when I get there tonight.
Daisy, this exhibition match being scheduled where it is, it's obviously helped the whole AFLW component gain massive traction around the country. Ideal world for you now that you've gone through a couple of seasons with this current structure, what is it? Because of the prominence around this game, then you've got the AFLW competition, and I then know you also go back and play locally as well. If you're asked by the AFL, and I'm assuming you will be at some stage, for the ideal fixturing for AFLW matches throughout the course of the 12 months, what is it? How's it look like?
Yeah, you're right. There's so many different dynamics. I mean, it's almost like I've got to look down and see what jumper I'm wearing at the moment and whose team that means I'm on. Because you throw into that we play. We've got our VFL finals starting the week after this match. So it's a pretty crazy calendar at the moment. But I think we're all appreciative of the fact that this is just our time. And whilst it's not exactly perfect and in an ideal world, you might be able to focus on the top level. I think we're all aware that we're just a part of a time where we do get those great opportunities, but we've also got to make sure that we look after the level coming up underneath us and the grassroots. But in terms of the format, in an ideal world, I really enjoyed the summer format. I thought it allowed us to offer something different and almost have a point of difference to the AFL competition, which is so big and has already established itself so well. I liked the idea that we could, you know, have our opportunity that is like that, but create something new for ourselves. So as the competition gets bigger, and naturally, hopefully that means the season becomes longer, I'd love to, you know, play in that off-season period and really own that. But I think as more teams come in, there will have to be some overlap with the AFL season, which hopefully we get to a point where that's okay and we go head-to-head with it and fans are prepared to tune in and watch both, which I'm pretty confident would be the case. I mean, if you in the off-season and our finals overlapped with the start of the men's season, I think you'd have enough people engaged and prepared to watch it and wanting to see it through that it would carry itself over.
Hey, Daze, as we let you go, good chance for Mo Hope to remind us how good she is too after, she would admit, a disappointing AFLW, but a star.
Yeah, absolute star. And, I mean, these big stages are usually where she does her best work. I know she'd be really looking forward to it. And, yeah, it was quiet throughout the AFLW series, I think, by her own standards. But it's been good to kind of see her working hard during this break that we've got. I think she's really keen to take herself back up to that level that we all know that she can go to, and I definitely wouldn't put it past her to do that tonight when the lights are shining and everyone's tuning in, because she really laps that up.
Perfect, Daze. Thank you very much for joining us. Have a great night tonight.
Thanks, boys. Enjoy your weekend off.
Daisy Pearce. Absolutely, Daisy Pearce. Yes. Captain of Victoria. Going to be a cracker.
She's a star.
Naif, you're calling that game.
Certainly am tonight. We're going to be there. It's going to be a really good game. Daisy Pearce, she's the best in the business.
Triple M football on air at what time, Brownie, tonight?
7.
133-53 is the number. Yes, Purple?
Just an update on Ablett, Jim, before we go to that break. Mark McGugan from the Channel 9 network has been at Geelong training today and has just said that Selwood trained. He worked off to the side for most of the session, BT, but was changing direction with no worries. He then joined in a bit of Matt's simulation at the end, and he said he's still got work to do, but going well, expects to be named. So Mark McGugan following that information for us here.
I just want to do a bit of a forward look at a very brief forward look, Duck, at the four finals we're going to experience. Because as we get closer, obviously we'll analyse it up the wahoo. But now we've got a bit of time to assess these games.
And Duck, when we do this, you know, respect our opinions as well, if you don't just dismiss them.
All right, so let's...
You're not with Roosy now on a Sunday.
Let's start with the Adelaide GWS.
Yeah, well, that's an absolute beauty, isn't it? But the fact that it's in Adelaide, you expect that Adelaide, if they've got a weakness, Brownie, the Crouch brothers have really stepped up. I have no doubt that they'll try to tag Sloan. They'll want to take Sloan out of the equation, because when teams have done that, they've slowed Adelaide down.
Do you bring Matty De Boer in to do that? At the expense of Stevie J?
It's a big question, isn't it? That is the question. That's
a massive question. I would play Stevie J if I was Leon Cameron. I'd give him. Yep. I'd
even
give him
on
one.
The back of what happened last week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The
whole team.
You got a week off now Stevie J to rest up.
You're no, BT?
It's not going to happen. I'm not no. It's not going to happen. Have you guys been reading what Leon said over?
Well, he didn't answer it, did he? Yeah. Even yesterday, did not answer it.
In his football talk, he is being polite and respectful. Stevie J, I don't think he'll play.
I'm hearing the same thing, Bristol.
Yeah.
I'm hearing highly unlikely unless they've got late injury.
I'm hearing last week
was the last goal.
Was the show. Was the Matty De Boer comes in to play on Rory Sloan.
Yeah, it's a fascinating game, and to be honest, it's a toss of the coin.
Lost two in a row.
GWS can obviously.
Can't remember the last time the Adelaide first ranked team in the comp have lost the last two home and away games going into a final series.
They played a really good game against Sydney. I thought they played the better footy other than the first 20 minutes of that game. But you're right.
Did it happen to them last year as well? Adelaide?
Yeah, they got beaten by
West Coast. GWS have the advantage. It's their pace through the midfield. Yeah, but we know that the Crouch brothers can win their own footy, and then they don't really give it back. So it's going to, as most games happen, it's going to be the midfield battle.
And the concern for me, if they're marking the footy, if Cameron and Patton and Lobb are marking the footy, then I just think that they win. And I know Adelaide have got a great attack as well. But if they're not marking the footy, then those guys, the Leaves and these guys, if they can intercept Mark and they get that run off half back, then Adelaide will be hard to beat. It's a fascinating game. It really is a toss of the coin.
So they're all playing, in your eyes, Lobb,
Cameron Patton.
Absolutely.
And the next game, Jim, is the big one, the Friday night.
Yeah,
and
what about it?
This will be Richmond the first time Richmond win a final since 1995.
You reckon? Cats have had it all over will the Tigers.
But this is the MCG, and they play it so well. The width of the ground, the Cats have struggled with the width of the MCG over the last two seasons. Now, Richmond play it so well. They are primed to win this. I think they're just about the bet of the first week of the finals.
Their brand of footy really stacks up in finals as well.
They don't rely on anybody.
No, there's no reliance, and that's built on pressure.
And they're not just the bet of the week of the first week of the finals. They're the bet of the finals.
Yeah. Well, hello, well, they're $2.10 and Geelong are $1.74. So Richmond every day of the week, Friday night.
You're
next
saying
week.
They're going real deep, Ron.
I'm saying they're going to play all their games at the MCG and they're going to probably win those.
All right. Sydney and Essendon. Does anyone give Essendon? I'm not as confident as you blokes about that final. I think Geelong are, for some reason, Richmond have real issues with Geelong, and I don't know what it is.
Essendon, Sydney, you talk about that. I think Essendon can cause the upset here. The favourite side is Sydney, no question. But for me, last time they played, Essendon, I reckon they gave them a bit of a going over, and it was only the last 5 minutes where they failed. To me, Essendon win this.
It's speed over grunt, isn't it? Sydney, we know, really strong midfield and Essendon. But for me, there's still concerns over Hurley, Hooker and Fantasia. I know they've got...
I think Fantasia's the biggest doubt of that trio, Duck.
Hurley, Hooker, definitely. I've heard Hooker's struggling a little bit as well. Right. So they're big inclusions. If they can get up, then, the Bombers, you just don't know with the Bombers. I think out of all of the final eight teams, the Bombers are the X factor.
Yep.
The one you just don't know what they could do.
This is enormous for me, this game, because if Sydney win it, and I suspect they will, then Geelong or Richmond play them the next week.
Say that again.
And if Sydney beat Essendon, they play the loser of Geelong-Richmond, and neither of those clubs want to meet Sydney
whereabouts
at the MCG.
At the MCG.
So Geelong or Richmond do not want to run into Sydney the next week. It's a huge game. Last one, Port Adelaide and West Coast.
Well, West Coast have got a little bit of a win behind them at the moment because they play Adelaide Oval better than any other travelling side. I think they've beaten Adelaide there in the last couple of years. They've beaten Port there. Look, I don't think they can get up, but I'll tell you what, it's going to be close. It's a home ground advantage for Port Adelaide, but I reckon they're shaky, Port Adelaide, in this first week.
Both making up the numbers for me, these two teams. The winner gets bundled out the week after. Jeez. Port Adelaide can't beat anyone above them.
When Charlie Dixon's on, Port Adelaide are a great side. Yeah, if he's not on, they can't win.
The fact's, when he kicks four goals, they're 8-0.
They're both playing teams they should beat.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
That's where it finishes.
Mindset-wise, Brownie, with all seemingly lost for West Coast going into that round 23 game, now they're alive. Can that actually have a propulsion effect?
I think so. I think they'd be very confident.
We're a week away from the final starting the main stuff, the September stuff, and this man and his club bring more heat into the finals than any other team. Their form line since the break has been extraordinary. Last 10 to 12 weeks, amazing for the Sydney Swans. Of course, beaten grand finalists last year, but over the last decade, they have appeared in as many, if not more, finals than any other club. So they know this time of year. And this man, of course, in his own playing time at North Melbourne, had plenty of experience in September as well. John Longmire, I'm speaking about, and he's on the line now. Horse, welcome.
G'day, JB, gents.
Hey, this is a great time of year. You don't need to be told that, but I just get the feeling that you guys quietly have got some real momentum coming in, both mentally and physically.
Yeah, look, we've been playing well for quite a while, got a large part of the season now, and we've got some confidence out of that. There's no doubt about that. The players are confident, looking forward to the final starting next week. But as we know, there's no second chances. It feels like in some ways we've been playing a lot of elimination finals, and we've got the main one coming up next week.
And the break, I reckon, has come a good time for you too, because as you've just said, when you have to keep playing elimination finals just to get there, that can be pretty mentally sort of tiring and wearing. But now you get that two-week break to get your very experienced list nice and cherry ripe.
Yeah, we had training today, and training went well, and our reserves have just finished, so... good to be able to get a good hit out over the weekend and prepare our players best mentally and physically as best as we can for next week.
Hey, Horse, are you a fan of the bye?
I was a bit sceptical of it last year, Duck, when you're finishing the top four. I think we've got to be a little bit mindful that, I guess I was like a lot of coaches in relation to finishing top four. It's not a great idea. But as far as sort of waiting and determining whether it's an advantage or not, we probably need more than one year's example as far as how it sort of impacts the top four versus the bottom four.
They're a bit of an X factor, the Bombers. Do you look back at the last time you played them, given that you sort of got out of jail on that night?
Yeah, we do. I mean, obviously, we look at the way they played, and you know, they were very good. They played with real speed in the ball, and you know, I've got some very good forwards as well. So, you know, we identified that. We know we needed to play right to the final second, and didn't hit the front until just after the siren had gone.
You've got the superstar Buddy Franklin over your end, but a clone of his at the other end is Big Joe Danaher. Do you play a team defence? Do you send someone to him, or will you have multiple players roll through him?
Oh, it sort of depends on where he is, Franny. I mean, we sort of Dane Lampy played a bit on him last time, and he's a, you know, he's a very good defender, but obviously gives up a bit of height, and we've still got Mulliken and Grundy as well. So guys that usually take those key position spots, no doubt they'll be amongst those boys on the night.
John, obviously when you had the disastrous start to the season, you needed a lot of things to happen from that moment onwards. And leadership was obviously a key to then what was to lie ahead. Josh Kennedy, just in that context, how have you found his season?
Yeah, it's been fantastic, Damo. I mean, he was good early, even though it was 0-6. You can't judge him just on the scoreboard at that point in time. He was still fantastic. He was playing pretty good footy and was good around the club too. You know, he's every type of the captain that I expect him to be, and he's been terrific. He's really involved in everything that we do and a lot of the decision-making off the field, and his form's been absolutely solid as well.
And selection for an All-Australian team is obviously very difficult, and it's acknowledged that it's very hard to fit just 22 players into that status. But were you surprised that he wasn't one of those 22?
Oh, look, I would have liked to have seen him in. But, you know, I've obviously got a bias here. I would have liked to have seen him in, but I understand how difficult it is to fit them all in.
Hey, Horse, inside a footy club, whether it's yours or the other 17, the two things you never blame a performance on are injuries and officials, in other words, umpiring. But inside the tent, you know how devastating injury can be to your chances of performing well. And whenever I talk about this, I use your club's first 6 weeks of this season as an example. As good as the Sydney Swans are, when you cop significant injury, it's just so hard to overcome.
Yeah, look, it's such obviously a fine line in this competition. Equalisation's absolutely preached from all areas of the AFL, and whether it's the draw or the salary cap or the draft, it's you know, we've seen the results of equalisation, I guess, this year as much as any. And there's such a fine line between winning and losing, and even regardless of how well you went the year before, it is so hard to keep winning. And you know, we things didn't go quite right for us at the start of the year. We had a few injuries and didn't get over the line in a few games. Didn't help us, but we also didn't play as well as what we should have. So it was a combination of both that meant that we got off to that 0-6 start.
Horse, your former captain that gave us his top 10 paganisms earlier on in the show. Actually, quite funny, I must admit, for Duck today. What was your favourite paganism?
You know, I do anything down my back, because otherwise, and you know, tell me it's raining, otherwise I'm not going to quite believe you. And this, I could go on for an hour. In fact, it's quite interesting.
Do you use them, Horse, yourself with your group?
Well, every now and then one might slip out and I get a bit of a smirk from Johnny Blakey up the back of the room and has a bit of a chuckle about it.
Blakes doesn't leave your side too often. I reminded the boys when Dennis told Johnny that he was too nice. He'd love him to marry his daughter.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. No, that's as good a rap as you can get.
Yeah, very good.
What have you done just in the time since we last saw you play a game of footy, John? Do the players get a little bit of time away?
Oh, they had 2 days off, but that's at the start of the week. And a couple of days off, but they've been back in training since then and preparing and trained again today. So you know, hopefully we get them in the best possible state for next week.
And obviously outside of finishing in the top four, which would have been a stated desire before the season started, do you feel though, strangely enough, you're actually hitting this final series as in good a shape as you've ever been in?
Well, I mean, I think people probably forget over the years. You know, last year we finished on top of the ladder. We're in reasonable shape then. So, you know, I think that everyone sort of lives in the moment very much, and you know, whilst we feel in reasonable shape now, we've been in reasonable shape in this situation before, and we know it all comes down to making sure you can get the best possible game week by week, and hopefully put together a good month of footy.
It's a real study, isn't it, in just wanting to hang in there? Because it would have been easy, I would have thought, for some people around your club to think at 0-6, well, let's look after beyond 2017. And yet you, I know personally, never, ever went down that path.
No, I mean, you always try and look in the future and manage the present.
every week, and that's what we try and do. And we continue to, we had six debutants in the first 5 weeks this year. So some of those injuries allowed us, on the back of seven debutants last year, to introduce some new players. We continue to do that and still try and win games of footy. It's not easy. It's easier said than done, but that's what we try and do. And even after the first 6 weeks, that was still maintained, to try and keep blooding young players and try and keep winning and try and do both.
Hey, Horse, you see, during the season, teams, GWS, one of them, Essendon at times, another, with this devastating quick slingshot ball movement where it ball's pinging around and, you know, they're having multiple inside entries and really freewheeling out of the back half and all the rest of it. You just know that when September comes, footy's not played like that. What are you expecting from Essendon in a week's time?
Oh, we're expecting they can certainly score quickly. There's no question about that. But they've also played a pretty solid brand of footy as well. You don't get to a final series without playing a good competitive finals-type footy during the course of the year. And they've been able to do that, clearly. They've got a really good team. They'll get some players back, we'd expect, for next week's game. And we know they're really hungry. So I'm expecting a really, really tough game like we got here at the SCG a few weeks ago.
Well, good luck with it. We can't wait to see the Sydney Swans in September doing what you do best.
Good on you. Thanks, guys.
John Longmire. Coach of, very, very good coach of the Sydney Swans. And geez, they've had an incredible ability, Purple, year after year to be at the highest level, the Swans, haven't they? It's just amazing.
Again,
for a long time.
It was lost on a lot of people last year, and John pointed it out just then, that they had seven debutants in last year's grand final team, in which they started, at least until the hour before the game, the favourite. And they've done the same thing again this year. They just continually rebuild on the run and yet still compete.
Without a doubt,
it's extraordinary.
Haywood, Melikan, all of these guys. They've got Florent, who's not in the team at the moment, but they've been able to blood him. They've just got so much talent.
The most important player that they missed at the start of the year was Dane Rampey, without a doubt. Yeah. He makes that side infinitely better. The only other one that'd be out of that side that'd make a difference is Lance Franklin.
And I'll tell you who's made a big difference since coming back as well, McVay. His use of the footy has been impeccable since he's come back in. Just goes to show you, and I know he's retired now, but that's why I thought Montagna might actually go on and play another season, because he's that type of player for St Kilda. But, and I know McVay's been told he's not playing for the Swans next year.
On, so, but not for the Swans.
But I think he's been integral.
Yeah, Heath Grundy's an amazing story too, isn't he? Yeah, he's often been maligned, yet he's so crucial.
We all thought he was nearly gone 3 years ago, and he's still going strong.
Kennedy, Hanbury,
Parker,
Parker, Heaney, their midfield Mills. Group. Their midfield group to me, Naif, is as good, if not better, than any of the eight teams left.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? They're so hard in and around the footy. You can't move them. They're immovable. Yep. But then they don't give it back. The only thing is, at the MCG when they play there, does that style of play suit the width that they have? It's a tough one because they play the SCG so well because it's small. It's similar to what Geelong do down at their home deck, but they'll be very, very hard to
contested
beat.
Contested footy wins finals. Yeah. We know that, and they are a contested footy beast. I can't wait to see them attack this final series. I reckon if they get over Essendon, and that's obviously a big if because nothing wrong with what the Bombers are doing, they are real dangerous.
Yeah, I know we spoke about the Bombers upsetting them, but I can't see that happening. I think Sydney are the form side going in. They're belting everybody, and I think Essendon are making up the numbers.
All right, enjoy the game tonight, AFLW, Naif.
Yeah, can't wait for that one.
Purple, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Duck as well, Bristle. Hose Mary, beautiful job done by you, as always. And Snorkel out there, magnificent. Who we got? DP? Who's been doing the... DT, is it? Well done by you too, mate. You've done a beautiful job of helping us today, especially just finding Duck. His inability to tell us something we didn't know. But we need to go.
Do
the Fiat Doblo, by the way. 660 kilo payload, the versatile Fiat Doblo, your right-hand van. You have been listening to the Saturday Rubbers. Triple M rocks footy.
Shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
Triple M rocks football.